Consensuades, un programa amb mirada interseccional sobre la diversitat de sexe, gènere i el no-binarisme. Direcció, Montse Casaoliva. Producció, Sopa d'Artistes.
Hi, I'm Montse Casaoliva, erotic illustrator of sexual dissidencies and defender of gender diversity. First of all, to thank Radio Maricel for making a hole for me in their space and allowing to talk about feelings without shame, about non-binaries, about sexual orientation, about gender identity and gender expressions, about interpersonal relationships and sexual practices. If you have chosen this podcast, it is because we have drawn your attention and nothing further from our goal. We want to give you voice, make visible as sexual dissidents. The program has an intersectional, inclusive look, no right of admission, of course. So here comes any person of any diversity who wants to have their voices, who needs to talk about their experience and who chooses a public medium like a local radio Maricel from Sitges to be heard. Why consensual? Consensual, it is because people relate to each other in any way, and we believe it is absolutely necessary that there be consent expressed explicitly without any doubt about the relationship. The risk, actions and consequences are clear. Every relationship should have a framework that contemplates these parameters so that the participants don't have a distorted perception of reality. Obviously, we are not talking about drugs or alcohol, rather than expectations and stereotypes imposed. If not, that feel free, always respecting that one's own freedom ends and where that of others begins. Consent marks the path of any relationship. It helps us believe in what we do and in the common project with the person or persons involved in the relationship, even with ourselves. Consensus relationships with our group, whether you call it family, tribe, friends, or people, gives me meaning to the Consensuadas program. Ah, and an important fact, the difference between mistreating or having power in a relationship and living it freely and in an emotionally balanced way without abuse is precisely consent. Welcome to Consensuadas. Jan is 50 years old and I am his zucchini. The first time I thought it was a term of endearment. And yes, it is, but it is also a way to include polyamorous and in your personal relationships. Our relationship began at a festival where we met hugging each other in a community activity where we were part of a herd that worked together and gave each other warmth and support we need. We've never had sex, not because we don't like each other, but because everything flows in one direction and what is one way today can change tomorrow. We don't care. We love and care for each other without thinking about what is the reason that has made us meet in a common destiny. Zero expectations every time we meet again, when he returns from his trips to Australia, where he spends half the year, and the other half in Europe, especially in Barcelona, the city he has chosen to settle down when he stops moving around the world. He's a very, very special and beautiful being inside. Welcome, Jan. So, we continue the Consensuadas program in Radio Maricel. Today in English, sorry because my English is not very good, but the English of our convidat, com és convidat, Jan? Our
invited guest.
Invited guest. It's better, and we are going to do our best. I present us Jan Scherer. Jan is a non-binary or non-categorized queer poly person. So welcome to this program, and thank you, Jan.
Yes, thank you, Monse. It's a pleasure to be.
Perfect. Explain us the terms love and scruffness, and why are you choose the polyamory way to your relationships?
That's a very complex question, and I like it how you picked up the term love and scruffiness. I used that many, many years ago just to write a little personal report like I sometimes do and which I don't often share with people. I later wrote a little memoir which I have shared with some people, including with you. But I think love and scruffiness actually came from this idea we're often looking for perfection in love. We're also often looking for perfection in relationship. And as a queer identifying person, that can sometimes be very confronting, very intimidating, because you often get the sense, I can't pass this. This is a standard that I can't possibly meet. And looking for a kind of scruffiness in love is in a way, a little way out of that.
Okay, but what is related with polyamory? These two concepts in de qué manera? I don't know the how.
Yeah, you could say that the perfectionism that I've been
the perfection of love.
Yeah, or the perfectionism of relationship sometimes applies to the picture of monogamy. It's like you get confronted with this desire to want the perfect monogamous relationship. It's all like in the it all should be like in the textbook, and you kind of stand there and realize I can't fulfill this norm. I would like something that is not so perfect, and that in a way opens up a realm of possibilities. And maybe that's what I call scruffiness. Scruffiness meaning things are just not perfect. Things are maybe a little bit dirty sometimes, and but you know, dirty and happy at the same time.
It's for that you say another word of love isn't just possible. It has arrived and it works. This is
I think I concluded my text with that. This was actually, and that's the topic I'd really like to talk about a bit more, this concept of coming out. I think when I wrote this text, which is now 13 years ago, I had a bit of a coming out as a polyamorist. I always knew I was non-monogamous, but finding the language and particularly finding the community about this goes back to about late 2000s, early 2010s, when the community was becoming more visible. And you would actually go to festivals, and there were polyamorous people holding workshops. And I realized for the first time, hey, there's actually support here, there's social support. Before that, I often felt very alone. And I think much of that actually has to do with how queerness was actually understood when we came of age. You know, we're roughly the same age, Monse. And and so we essentially were teenagers in the 1980s and came of age during that period, which I think is really a quite interesting period. Well, firstly, AIDS had entered the scene. I'm starting with the sort of scariest and most negative aspect first, but in a way, to me, it was it kind of meant from the very start of exploring my sexuality that sexuality was something that was actually potentially very dangerous. And that, I think, that is, well, it could kill you, you know? HIV was real, and at the time HIV was pretty deadly. There was really no viable therapy yet, and that fear was around, and that fear in a way shaped me, I would say, and many people of my generation, as you know, tread with caution here. And when I talked, even at the time, or when I still talk to friends who were just a few years older than us, they kind of had this really carefree and beautifully carefree period of exploring their sexuality, and particularly their queer sexuality. It was not associated with that potentially lethal danger. But for us, it was like, okay, sexuality, I'd better take some care here. And that, in a way, to me, has always been an element for believing, how sexual am I really? And which brings me to the topic of actually coming out in the 80s. I think, look, I grew up I now live partly in Australia, partly in Barcelona, but I grew up in a relatively liberal Northern European city. And being gay was something that's in the 80s in an urban liberal context was relatively accepted. So it was okay to identify as gay, but at the same time, things were very binary. You were either gay, you were straight. There was no real in between. There were no other options. And at the same time, there was also this expectation you had to be sexual or else there was something wrong with you. You had to be in a couple relationship or else there was something wrong with you. And I realized quite early on in the game, definitely in my early 20s, I'm not really straight. I'm not really gay. I don't fulfill any of those standards. I'm not really sexual. I'm not really a person who's made for couple relationships. It was actually a really tricky space to negotiate at the time. And so at the same time, it was actually really difficult to find a like-minded supportive community. For many years, I believe maybe I'm actually the only person in the world struggling with this, because there was no internet where you could just research this sort of stuff and find your community online and then somehow try to meet them in real life. It was all left to chance and maybe serendipity. And yes, serendipity eventually did arrive, but not after many years of, well, I would say for me, essentially sitting on the bench, removing myself from this game. Relationships, of this game of sexuality, and essentially saying, I'd rather do without this for a while because I can't find anything that suits me.
Yeah, it's difficult to find. The emotional connection between people on a polyamory tribu, it's too hard than on a monogamist foundation meets?
Well, I guess it is. It is also a question of actually exploring something new. To me, that was always. I already mentioned I felt very alone with my particular condition, but I also felt like I'm not giving up here, am I? I do want to explore my world of love and my sexuality, and I just have to do it very differently from everyone else I knew. And of course, many people were beholden to what you call the monogamous foundation myth, which essentially says there is the one and only, and it's forever, never should you ever be interested in anybody else. And I do totally acknowledge that this works for a lot of people, but I think what the last, say, 10, 15, 20 years have shown me is that there's more and more people actually questioning this monogamy myth. And back when we were coming of age, like 30 or 35 years ago, I would say it wasn't questioned in the same way. Most people were essentially saying, this is the norm and this is the standard that I'm aspiring to. And this is what I want to achieve in my life, even if they were not necessarily... even if it wasn't necessarily their basic nature. I think that is also something that queerness has actually come a long way from. If you go back another 20 years older than us, there was probably the sense you have to get married to an opposite sex partner, even if you're queer, even if you're gay, because that's just a done thing. I think when we were teenagers, that had pretty much at a point where people would not longer do that. They would kind of accept their sexuality, their sexual orientation, and say, if I'm into the same sex, then I'm also looking for relationships with the same sex, even relationships that might look like marriage for people who are monogamously minded. But nowadays we've opened it up further and we've kind of realized, yes, there are other forms of relationships. There are other forms of relationships that include more people than just two. And there's also the possibility of not having couple relationships, of being like a relationship anarchist, for example, or being a solo polyamorist, or also to just, like I did in much of my 20s, just sit on the bench and watch the show and wait for something to happen that would actually open possibilities for me. And that did happen eventually, with the advent of the internet, with getting older, and yeah, and maybe also with generally people getting wiser,
freedom, totally freedom to let you, it's like the film of let it go, no, it's like the Frozen.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a total freedom, because it certainly didn't feel like freedom at the time. I have to think of a Leonard Cohen song here. You know, it looks like freedom and it feels like death. It's something in between, I guess. And another film and musical reference that comes to mind is the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, which was actually looking into the life of Freddie Mercury.
And Queen in general.
And Freddie Mercury was one of my great heroes of my adolescence. Yeah, so back then he was still alive. I saw him live. Gosh, that was quite a special experience. But in the film, there's the scene where Freddie Mercury, who I now really see as a fellow uncategorizably queer person, and that was not really clear while he was still alive, also because we didn't have the language for it. There was a lot of speculation. Is he gay? Is he straight? Is he bi? Yeah. Is he whatever? We don't really know. But there's the scene in the movie where... Yeah. Yeah. I think he reunites with his band members after a period of doing different things, and they all say, but aren't we family? And I think he was still a bit skeptical, and his response is, what do you mean, are we family? Yeah. You guys are family, referring to his band members who were married and in family relationships, but what do I have? I don't have a family, I've got parties.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually saying a lot. I mean, I never quite shared the glamour, or my life never quite shared the glamour of Freddie Mercury's life, obviously. But yeah, for a while that was me. Other people had big capital R relationships, families, and I had parties. And I enjoyed the parties. Hey, I'm not discounting that. But yeah.
So what about... you talk in your memories that I've read, you talk about NRE. It is involved with sexual energy. It is, what's the meaning of this?
Yeah, new relationship energy, or energia da nova relació. I'm sure that exists in Catalan too. I've heard it in Catalan. So it basically refers to this really giddy state when you've fallen in love, you've met a new person, and you know, you get this honeymoon phase where everything is wonderful. And it's quite interesting, because I've just been reading Jessica Fern's latest book, Polly Wise, and she says there's actually an explanation from evolutionary biology that can be used for this state, because it really means you're actually bonding with a new person in ways that actually makes you more resilient when later on you have a more established relationship and there's invariably crises in this relationship. The memory of this bonding with a lot of beautiful hormones and a lot of beautiful energy actually makes you more willing to resolve those crises with that person. And so we go through this, but what in polyamorous circles is often being said about NRE is understand that this is a passing state. Again, the monogamous foundation myth sometimes believes this is a state that's going to last forever. We will forever be as in love as on the first day. And in polyamory, we often say, enjoy this time, absolutely. But given that it's also usually has impact on other people, other partners, because you might have other partners in polyamory, who might just look at you and think, gosh, he's on some kind of drug trip, isn't he? and so essentially making big decisions of saying, oh, this is now the big new person who's going to turn my life upside down and I want to give up on everything else is you in polyamorous circles is usually seen as very unwise. So the recommendation is enjoy NRE as much as you can, but don't let it guide your life decisions. Let it come and also let it leave your life and see how you can transform this new relationship into something more durable or not. You know, it's also totally fine to have an intense, powerful, but also short relationship that does not transition into something more durable. But at the same time, if you're in a polyamorous constellation, there are other people to think of. And I think that is the difference in dealing with NRE between polyamory and monogamy.
Sorry, sure. I love that definition that you are saying, talking about. So you talk also about tantra, like yin or call sex, and the polyamory, it's like yang and hot sex.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily relate those two types to polyamory and tantra respectively. They can infuse everything. I think that was also one of my journeys in sexuality and realizing that not everything that some people call sex is actually sex, and not everything that some people don't call sex is necessarily non-sexual, if you know what I mean. I must admit, in my time, I have had lovers who basically had this definition. I think that also came out of the 90s of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky's affair, where it was kind of said, if it's not in, it's not sex. It isn't sex. And I was skeptical even then, and I'm even more skeptical now, that of course there are lots of wonderful forms of sex that have nothing to do with penetration. And maybe you could call them yin sex in a way, because they are more based on a cooler energy, if you like. And whereas yang sex is something that I would say is hot sex. That is, yeah, it's really into chasing the orgasm and making it as intense as possible. Whereas it often also dissipates really fast. I'm not saying this is bad, you know, it's totally enjoyable in its own right, but it's just not the only thing. There's just other forms of sex, and some forms of sex are much cooler, much slower, and they may not lead to what we conventionally think of as orgasm, but they might actually make you feel orgasmic for days on end. And that just needs its space. And for me, that was also an exploration that has to do with us, with what I earlier mentioned about coming out as someone with an unconventional sexuality that was not about chasing the orgasm, but maybe trying something completely different with people.
Yeah, sure. I think that I agree totally with you, because we learn about sexuality in the porn films, and where the, I don't know the name of phallocentrista, it's like
phallocentric.
Yeah, you understand. So This is the penetration. It's the only way to have orgasm and pleasure, and for women and for men. So it's like you say, there are another ways to have pleasure, to have sex. No, not only the penetration, not only with a cock. So yeah. Thank you for your words.
Yes.
And multipolar love constellation, BS monogamist assertiveness. I don't know where I pronounce well.
Yes. Where does that actually fit in? I think I've this kind of touches a sense of exclusion, which I've also often experienced, particularly when I was younger and was kind of trying to, where do I fit in, trying to find out where do I actually fit in into this whole field of sexuality. Like I mentioned earlier, there have been long periods where I just basically set myself on the bench and thought, I don't know, let's wait. But the waiting also meant, you know, you don't stop relating to people. You still want to love and be loved. I think that is pretty natural for all of us. And sometimes as a person who's not quite in the game of monogamy, you feel excluded by monogamy, because monogamy by definition is about two people and not about third and fourth people. And once you're the third and the fourth person, even if that's not in a sexual relationship, but in a platonic relationship or in a cool sexual relationship or in an otherwise affectionate relationship or whatever, you know, you name it, there's just so many options. Sometimes that can feel like an uneven power game, where invariably the non-monogamous person or the person who can't conform to monogamy is, just basically gets the short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. And that has often been an issue where I felt I'm actually subject to discrimination here. And that was all the more reason to eventually, when that became more possible and became more out there, to actually find my own tribe, my own community, where a different kind of relationship ethics would prevail, and where people were actually aware of such patterns, of such power dynamics or unhealthy power dynamics, and would do their best to actually avoid that and to counteract that.
Perfect. So you are traveling 6 months on Europe and 6 months on Australia. Now you are in Melbourne. You have all the people's polyamory people in every country. It is
well, that would sound extremely glamorous, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because I didn't know how to express that in English. Sorry, I'm not very good in English.
We have this expression in English: a lover in every port, which in the past referred to sailors who would basically sail the seven seas and then wherever that. And there's some lover. Look, I have a lot of wonderful, important people in my life. I would not necessarily categorize all of them as lovers, or certainly not as sexual partners. And I'm still, when I said I was sitting on the bench for much of my 20s, that basically meant I identified as asexual. I still identify on the asexual spectrum. So there are periods in my life when sexual activity is not a priority, and others when it is. And I've learned to accept that. It was hard in the past, but nowadays I see this is all part of a cycle, and I can live with that cycle. And that cycle has a lot of me in it. And so I do. Yeah, I live nomadically. I think I don't really have a permanent home anywhere. I essentially live in house sits and with friends and relatives and sometimes in Airbnbs and sometimes in a tent when I go hiking, like I do now.
It's a very different life, because we are used to have a house and living in a house in the same place. And moving in another place, but I like your way to live, because it is very different. So it's for that we are talking now, because you are a very special person. Mm.
Yeah. And look, I'm not saying that I'm going to do this forever. I'm also aware that we might come to an age where this is going to become really difficult and really exhausting. Not sure how far off that age is. I hope it's still a long way off, but I'm pretty sure it will come eventually. So it's it's not necessarily made for eternity, and I'm not planning to just to keep doing this. I have also not planned to do it for much of the last 10 years like I have, but it has worked for me, and it has worked for me particularly because it has been possible to build communities in various parts of the world, mostly of course in Melbourne and Barcelona, and not least Sitges. So Sitges has been one of my homes, particularly during the pandemic, but also before and after, and it's got a place in my heart, absolutely.
Me too. So we are finishing because we have only 9 minutes to finish the recording. Could you read your favorite poetry, Jefferson Airplane? Because I love that poet.
Yeah, it's actually a song. Did you find it on Spotify or somewhere? It's a beautiful song from 1967, which I think I actually had that album as a CD, you know, back in the days when we would have CDs and listen to music from CDs. And somehow I bought that album probably cheaply because it was an old classic, you know, Jefferson Airplane. And then this was actually during that coming out around 2010 that I actually listened to it and then listened to this last song and realized, wow, this is actually about polyamory.
Yeah, sure.
It was written in 1967 at a time when the word polyamory did not exist. But there were actually a lot of people back then in the 60s who were experimenting with free love, as they called it then.
I was surprised also with that lyric.
Well, it's also because the song, in a way, is very sometimes as contemporary polyamorous, we look back on the free love period and say, yeah, that was actually really lovely, but they weren't necessarily being very ethical, were they? It wasn't really about consent. It was more about act first and ask questions later. And maybe that was typical for that generation in a way. And I don't blame them for it. It was also an important process that they were going through. But with our generation, it was different, not least coming back to what I started with, because of the AIDS crisis, we learned that this carefree attitude to love and to sex was not viable. It was actually dangerous for your health. And we had to find something else. And we had to, work on this whole concept of consent. And we also had to work on, maybe on a little bit more negotiation and a little bit less spontaneity in how we organize our relationship life, our relationships and our sexuality. And, I think it was probably, whether you kind of use protection or not was probably not a conversation that was happening before AIDS in a big way. And since then, it's suddenly become the standard, and very quickly and by necessity. So I think that is the difference. But the song, in a way, very carefully kind of tries to negotiate something. It's basically about the female singer being in love with two men. It's not even clear whether it's with what gender they are. Is it? It could be. It just says at some stage you just stand there, your long hair flowing, which I guess a lot of people of any gender had very long hair in the 60s. Yeah. So that was kind of what you did.
Probably it was a woman because in 1967, probably it was a woman, because I don't know if. Men are avoid them to have a long hair, but anyway,
in the hippie generation, very definitely.
It's possible.
Long hair for everyone, and I think there was a time if you didn't have long hair, you wouldn't get a lover because it was so uncool. You had to grow your hair to have a sex life. So I don't know. But I kind of like it because it is, in a way, the song is actually being very careful about we're in the situation now, three people in love with each other. Why don't we just try this as a triangular relationship rather than forming a couple and booting one person out?
Exactly.
And it seems like an act of rebellion. And I think in a way, it still is an act of rebellion, and I think the song also says that your mother's ghost sits at your shoulder and says, told his eyes are a little bit colder, and saying you cannot do that. It's against all the rules that you learned at school.
So, yeah, sure. So,
you know.
Do you want to añadir? I don't know.
Do I want to add? Do I want to add anything? No, I love this conversation. I'm sure we could go on for hours.
But we don't have time. So we have to finish now the interview. I am very, very happy for this little conversation about polyamory, about the. I don't know your perception about love and sexual and non-sexual love, because all is love. This is not exclusion of some kinds of not sexual love. So tell one sentence to finish the interview.
What should I say? I would just like to extend my warmest and loving greetings from rainy Melbourne to hopefully sunny Sitges. Winter starting tomorrow, and apparently summer starting here, which let's see how that goes. So on that note, basically keep being queer and keep being proud of it. The world needs more of us.
Okay. So thank you very much, Jan, and we talk in another occasion for
absolutely.
Yeah, to record another polyamory, because
do that.
In
when I'm back in Barcelona, we can do it in Catalan.
Perfect. Yeah, in Catalan, yeah. Because we have lots of English people in Sitges. So we talk in another moment. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Monse.
Consensuades, un programa amb mirada interseccional sobre la diversitat de sexe, gènere i el no binarisme. Direcció: Montse Casaoliva. Producció: Sopa d'Artistes.
Color Sitges Links is a non-profit organization that was created in 2011 to address issues affecting the LGBT+ community in Sitges, Barcelona. Color Sitges Links connects citizens and visitors through a series of events and projects carried out exclusively by volunteers to normalize coexistence between the norm and gender dissidences. CSL is recognized as a pioneering entity in super activities in Spain and openness to gender and sexual diversity, and works in close collaboration with local authorities and other non-profit organizations to defend human rights, care for people in the emotional and health sphere, and well as programming, entertainment and culture for all. The motto of association is the pride of creating community, and our goal is to make Sitges a better LGBTIQ+ place to live or visit. Okay, we end today's program very happy to have shed light on unknown, curious and interesting terminologies for your life, like the polyamory. Don't forget to send us your stories or inquiries to the email radiomaricel@radiomaricel.cat. radiomaricel@radiomaricel.cat. And you will have the opportunity to have a voice in this program, where we hope to be able to help people come to terms with their lives, with our society acting as coexistence and fundamental right, human right, that should make us happy, free and proud. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.